Welcome back to Advanced Practice Weekly, where we're going to pick up the second part of the primary care podcast, talking with Salma and Lauren about supervision in practice. Okay, I wonder if in your practice you have a JD for Lauren, or you plan to, or what your thoughts were about job descriptions, or even having thoughts and ideas on where Lauren's role is going to look like, even if it's changed along the way.
Well, I will say, if that was me doing this again with Lauren, I would do exactly the same as what we've done with Lauren before and with any of my registrars, is I will literally say, can you help me write your JD? So Lauren, how did you help me write your JD? Because Lauren did it.
Well, I think we haven't got anything in writing, but it's all up there. It's all in the heads. So we obviously say that's an agreement with HEE. By the end of the masters, I'll have a job description written down. We, in terms of developing the role, we know what we're going to do, and we do have a clear plan for that. One area we're going to explore next year definitely is more going into the realm of frailty, palliative care, nursing homes. And there's a few reasons for that. One, I know that frailty is a big thing in ACP land. And so actually that's probably practically and on paper going to be an easy thing to implement. We should, there's a lot of policies and guidelines already about ACPs working in frailty. Secondly, it's really going to serve the practice because we've got a nursing home. We do rounds there twice a week. And oftentimes our registrars are going, which is great, but I'm planning to be here long term. I've been here for several years. I'll be here for many more, I'm sure. So it'd be lovely to for us as a GP practice to build a new relationship with the home. And for me, palliative care is sort of my background and something, well, the only thing really clinically that I lost coming into general practice because I wasn't in people's homes anymore. So that'll be really nice for me. So that's something that we are going to do from now, this year going forward, start me doing those ward rounds. We're planning on starting that off, joint visits with registrars or GPs, and hopefully being able to take that over at some point. Yeah, so as and when things crop up, I'm sure towards the end of the masters, we'll have to get it down properly.
Yeah, and I'd say exactly as Lauren has said, and just also remembering that Lauren has some really amazing skills from her nursing and community background that actually we don't want to lose. They may actually not necessarily fit totally sometimes with her ACP, I think it's really important to have that honest conversation as a supervisor, because I'm not just got the hat of being a supervisor, but also what's right for the practice, about we don't want you to lose those skills. So where can you put those in? So those sort of have to remain within the JD at the same time as the vision of where does Lauren want to be, which is if in a year's time prescribing, doing some frailty, doing some community work. So in between, I think you said, or Lauren said, I don't think of myself as a nurse on my ACP days. And I don't think of Lauren as a nurse or an ACP. I just think of Lauren as a clinician. And if it happens that one day she's doing, I don't know, measuring leg wounds or doing dressings or doing diabetes, and then another day she's seen tonsillitis, chest infections, whatever, UTIs, you know, all of those is just part of the JD. And we know as long as we can reframe it, if it's going wrong, or if she says, I need more for prescribing, then we can just reframe it.
So you basically come to that agreement by having an understanding of what you both want, having an understanding of what the practice needs, absolutely. But also, again, looking at Lauren as an individual, sure. So you could have a trainee in the future that's a pharmacist with a, like you say, cardiac background, and actually you might want to really filter those skills and keep those skills for that particular area. And I guess, like you say, it's evolving. So the job description isn't set in stone. And the great thing about it is you both got the flexibility to change to meet both of your needs. And I think that, you know, people worry about losing their ACPs. They're going to put all this investment in. But in terms of recruitment and retention, if you're both getting from it what you need, that's great for the practice and great for the trainee, because, you know, you're going to stay if you're really happy and supported and able to do what you are good at and feel passionate about.
Of course. And it just makes sense to hold on to what you have, because as Salma says, you know, these are skills that there was a reason I was hired as a practice nurse in the first place, because the practice needs nurses. So I really like the idea of being almost like a one-stop shop for patients in the future. I mean, how epic is that to have someone who can do it all, and we don't have to be passing patients from pillar to post. They come in with something acute, actually, something chronic needs addressing, or the other way around. And hopefully that's really going to serve our patients and the practice in the future. So you don't want to let that go. Yeah. And very specific to us, I'm leading the nursing team. It wouldn't make sense to completely let go of nursing, because how would I support my nursing colleagues if I'm not up to date with what they're doing? So of course there'll be an element of that there always. It will never be gone. And that also, you know, that's the beauty of ACP, that we will come from different backgrounds. So, you know, if we did manage to bag ourselves an ex-pharmacist ACP in the future, that's brilliant. We would love that. And we'd take full advantage of that, definitely, of their other skills that they have.
Yeah, so you don't have to abandon your base profession. Like you say, it comes through in all elements of being an ACP. So Lauren, do you have any tips for other trainees? I mean, so far you've mentioned kind of reading the multi-professional framework, definitely getting your reading in nice and early. Anything else that could really help trainees that are starting on the journey or going through the journey?
I think just be vocal. Speaking to some of the other trainee ACPs in my course this year, it seemed to me a lot of the issues they were having in their workplaces was really down to a lack of communication and not having that confidence to say, oh, actually, you know, this isn't what we've agreed, or, you know, this isn't going in the direction that it needs to go. This is counterproductive. I haven't had that problem. I'm aware I'm very lucky in that respect. I'm training in a place that I already work. I know my colleagues really well. There was that mutual respect there already. So it's not too hard for me to do that. But definitely be vocal. I mean, it's a given that you need to be able to receive feedback clinically and as a colleague, but you also need to have the confidence to be able to give feedback. Otherwise, nobody's going to know where you're at. And you really need to take the steering wheel for most of it, because it's not the supervisor's responsibility to be structuring that and to be structuring your learning. That's very much up to you to be very clear about where you're going, what's going on, what you need, being proactive clinically and academically as well about knowing what you need to brush up on. If you happen to have not seen a patient with XYZ in a long time and you think, oh God, I've forgotten all of that, it's up to you to do that. And if that means that you're needing extra support from your supervisor, or you want people to, even just as simple as, I need people to be on the lookout this week for patients presenting with this, you need to tell people. It's not just going to fall into your lap.
Salma, any tips for GPs supervising ACPs?
I think I've got a lot. So how long do you
Brilliant.
Want? How long have I got?
I'd love to hear them.
Okay, well, I think I did do a webinar with Lauren and I just came up with a load of 10 R's. So the first one would be respect. So you've got to have that mutual respect. Respect with who you both are, where you started with, why you're doing this. And so it's not just about me respecting Lauren, but Lauren's got to respect me. And it doesn't matter who I am. I could be somebody else. It might be, I respect the fact that you're doing the supervision for the practice. I'm actually probably doing it for myself. But if it happens to help and benefit the practice, because one of the reasons for that is, and I think I forgot to mention that, I think supervising, teaching, training, you don't have to be an experienced trainer. You can do it for your own learning, your own brain gym. Why did we go into medicine? Because we were interested. And actually, we forget. And do I want to go back and read all the guidelines and everything? Actually, isn't it amazing if Lauren happens to read them and shares them with me? So, you know, to keep my clinical interest going. So number one was respect. Number two, role play and reverse role play. So I would do little snippets of, in a pre-brief sometimes, or even in a, oh, that felt a bit awkward, or what do I do? Well, would you like me to pretend that I'm the patient? Or do you want me to pretend that I'm the clinician now? And that is a reverse role play, or, you know, so you can use bits of that in whatever form you like, whenever you like. I think people have called me the reflection queen. So, or, you know, feedback queen. I hope it's seen in a good way, but I do give feedback, but the hope is that I want it. So the first thing I will always be saying is, how was it for you? Now, I'm not expecting everyone to say I was amazing, because actually you can tell by body language and everything else. So you've got to be used to being able to say, how was it for you? Before then you say, can I say how it was for me? You know, how did that seem to go? Well, you know, could you make this different in your notes? Or, you know, how about if we do this a different way? And so within that, you might do scores. You might say, how confident are you at doing this consultation next time? how confident are you in this tutorial of knowing everything about eyes? You know, I think I asked that to Lauren. And then at the end, again, it doesn't really matter. She may have gone up, she might have gone down. I'm not worried. Because actually, if she's gone down, it means that she knows even more about what she doesn't know. So, but just mixing up different mediums of teaching. And number fourth R was real time. So real time feedback. No problem if I'm not there today or I'm remote and actually she's going to capture bits and just do a brief supervision with somebody else, but capture it somehow, either in a journal, in an audio, in a sentence, in a, I must tell Salma this, because actually 2 weeks down the line, you've kind of lost some of that in the formalized supervision. So doing real-time feedback, and sometimes we'll send a screen message saying that was great or that was awful because, and that's great because it will go in. So it's a bit like I say a nice meal. If you had a nice meal and you say it was amazing, actually 2 weeks down the line, can you remember it? And you know, are you going to go back on TripAdvisor and write something? Actually say it there and then to the waiters, to yourself, to your partner. Reveal gems. So you want to be able to say what you think was amazing about what they just did. And they probably have done something amazing and just not realized it. And it might even be the smile on their face or the way that they brought in that patient or the way that they helped them go the extra mile by doing something for them or shared something with them. So, and if you do reveal gems, then you can reveal the weaknesses, because you can't just keep finding weaknesses in someone, because then you'll feel criticized. And that's the difference between being criticized and being given feedback that actually you know is benefiting you and supporting you. So reframe, repetition all helps resilience and rebuild. So if you say, gosh, as a nurse, I would have approached it this way. But as an ACP, I'll approach it this way. And I see you're approaching it this way. And I think once Lauren said, you almost do it backwards, which I do. You know, I'll be thinking, right, I think this is either going to be this, this or that. So I'm going to, so she will then reframe the way. And so she's putting in a structure. So anyway, so reciprocity. I like that word because I found it. Because actually what I thought that's about is I help Lauren, Lauren helps me. And actually, I'd say it's more Lauren helps me and then I help Lauren. Because actually, if I find for some reason Lauren doesn't like me as a supervisor, she'll soon stop helping me and then I'll soon stop helping her. So reciprocity actually is what happens in life. You know, I help a neighbor, they help me. And it doesn't have to be something big. It could be a smile, a text, a conversation. Just, you know, in your head that they've both got each other's backs. And I think that is what's happening if it's working well in your practice for the team, for each other, for just each other's vision. So receiving feedback as well as giving, I've said, be responsive. And it's about relationships, not just of you, but your practice and the patients, and reassure. Reassure that they're doing okay. Doesn't matter if they've made mistakes. They will get there. We will get there. That's a hope. Obviously, if someone is not doing well, then you're going to have to reframe, rebuild again, and you keep doing the same thing, but don't lose the structure of supervision, which is probably those 10 R's.
Which is perfect. And I think particularly more if you're supervising someone of a different profession, so GP supervising any ACP, or if you're an ACP supervising a different base profession, it can feel really terrifying. And I think people are a bit more reluctant to take on a trainee because it just feels so overwhelmingly different. And I mean, they're perfect examples of how you can overcome that. But do you have any other advice?
So I think you know, I can make it all sound romantic, can't I? But you've got to buy in to the fact that this will be extra work. And yet, I don't want to put people off because you're buying in and a commitment to, it's a bit like, I don't know, you're buying a new house or you're going to have a child or you're going to make an amazing dinner. But, you know, you're going to have to put in some work. It's not going to happen. And I think it was Virginia, my lovely colleague, partner, practice manager, always said, you're not going to get anything good if you don't put loads of good work in. So I think the buy-in you've got to do, and if you're not in that right place, then you're almost going to have to share that at the beginning, because then someone's going to get disappointed. But you don't have to be all singing, all dancing all the time. Share when you're not feeling great. Share when today's not a great day for me to get feedback and I'm not feeling good. I'm just going to have my head down and just do the work. And shall we do lots of really quick debriefs of just when I say, is that okay? And you say, yeah, sure, that's fine. And, you know, I know anything I can help. No, not today, but maybe another day. So buy-in and commitment, but also the bits about life is a balance. And so that comes from my fame, a Rumi poet who's a Persian poet who says life is about holding on and letting go. So you might feel, if you're not experienced, or even forget if you're experienced, that you want to support too much and then you want to let go too much and you're getting the balance right or wrong. That, you know, it's like you're never going to totally get it right, but you're never totally going to get it wrong. So just sort of try and be that protective trampoline, but you're making it less wide sometimes.
In terms of overcoming GPs' anxieties around supervising trainees and kind of letting them loose into the wild, as it was, seeing patients.
Natalie, I think it's really important that that's a conversation that any supervisor has, and you don't have to be overly experienced, but just sharing the fact that you might feel anxious if they miss things. But know that actually, if you put sort of a trampoline of safety netting of who they can ask, and you know, you're sharing and learning from each other and the whole team is watching you, knowing that that trampoline, that if they fall, can go a bit smaller as they're getting more and more experienced. So don't let that put you off as a supervisor.
Oh, I really love that. That's really, really nice. And I guess it's no difference in terms of letting other professions do things in primary care.
Definitely. If a new doctor comes along, you'd be sort of, you know, helping them connect with the team. So again, just keeping some kind of structure, yeah, of supervision as to how that's going to help you and your anxiety, as well as Lauren said, sometimes it felt scary for them.
Yep. So you've got your own safety mechanisms in place already. And it's, I guess, not seeing an ACP as something so grossly different to anyone else in the team. And
exactly. And sharing what makes you feel anxious, because it might be that actually if Lauren just disappears off home and doesn't say goodbye to me and has done a whole ACP day, that might make me feel anxious, because that might make me think either she thinks she's so amazing and actually she probably is great. But even if she just says, bye, I had no problems today, we can discuss it at next week's one really interesting case, I'm feeling really happy with just, there's something about saying goodbye and something about saying hello when you know you're a supervisor, which again, just is part of a framework.
Really. Yep. So that two-way conversation, and that you know that communication has not been missed.
But you're off supervision now.
Absolutely. I really like that. It's a good way to start and finish any day, isn't it?
I think that this is something Sam was really hot on, shared learning. Yeah, so I know Sam likes to say that she, you know, having a trainee anything is a brain gym, definitely. And, you know, especially in terms of, I know when I was mentoring student nurses, it was always like, oh my God, I didn't know that, when they would come in with the up-to-date guidance and policies and things. So it's always helpful having a student around, of course. So yeah, mainly shared learning, but you know, the advantages of having a trainee is that one day that trainee is going to be fully fledged. So if you can commit to that now and stick through it, there's going to be a lot of payoff in terms of taking work off everyone, I hope.
Absolutely. Thelma, what about for you? What's the advantages of having Lauren or any trainee ACP in your practice?
Yeah, definitely. The being open to learning. And, you know, the difference you could say is, if you didn't feel confident, is actually, oh gosh, am I going to feel a bit stupid because I don't know things? I swear I've gone to Lauren many a time and say, I know nothing about this subject. Really know nothing. I know nothing about eyes, by the way. I just said what I think I know. No, but really, I don't. And actually, that was useful for me to see what I don't know and what I do know. So being confident with uncertainty and being confident with being unconfident. And then there's that whole thing about being open to learning. You said, what are the other advantages? Is being able to juggle different clinical risks. So I'm juggling clinical risks all the time with my own patients, but actually I'm now kind of juggling them a bit with Lauren, but I'd like to see how she's juggling them as well. And actually she's got slightly different boundaries to me. And actually it's quite useful. Recently I was reflecting back on a certain case that Lauren might have it right in safety, a certain patient, whereas I might be thinking I'm a bit more laid back about that. But it's really useful to have that reflected back. So that amazing reflection that if you can be open to it and the nuances of it, they come in layers as to what it is that supervision is doing. But I don't know, Lauren's personality, whoever she is and whoever a supervisor is, they're going to bring in their own strengths, their own funniness, their own quirks, their own talents, their own another person in that space with you on a learning journey that they want to be in is only going to be a win-win for the practice, surely, you hope. And the reciprocity's got to be in there. So it can't just be all about the supervisor or all about the supervisee. It's got to be. It's a two-way process here.
Definitely. And I think reception, I'm sure, will be very grateful for more availability for appointments and, you know, having that one-stop shop, Lauren mopping up all of those different skills.
Definitely. They love all of that, but actually they love watching us learn. I really do believe that. They get really excited when we say someone else has passed an exam or is on another step.
And you're sharing it as a practice, which is really lovely. It's quite a community.
Yeah.
Perfect. So I think overall we've touched on some really useful things for the supervisors themselves in terms of kind of breaking down some of the weaknesses, staying on track, tools that you can use to support your trainee. Really great tips in terms of how trainees can stay on top of the workload, but are really in the driving seat here to take forward their particular needs, because only they will know their needs and will have to drive it forward. And it's not the responsibility of the supervisor for that. So I think that's really useful. Mm-hmm. I just wondered if either of you had any take-home messages that you'd really kind of love to get across about the ACP. I'd like to come to you first, Lauren.
So I think my take-home messages for supervisors, prospective supervisors and workplaces as well, because everybody has to buy in, as Salma says, is actually, what do you want? So do you want an ACP? Is that what you need right now? Because you may not, and that's okay. But I think that's really important to know before you go committing to that, because it will be, to be blunt, it'll be a waste of time, a waste of money, a waste of resources. You're taking somebody away from a patient. What do you want? Or what do you need? Do you want a practice nurse who is also a prescriber? Because that is great and that is extremely useful. That may be enough for your practice, and that may be all that that clinician wants to do actually at the moment in their career. Do you want a nurse practitioner? It's an extension of the nurse role. Do you want a true ACP? Is that what's going to help? And if that's what you're going to commit to, or actually is what you need another doctor? Because that's another, you know, an ACP is not going to be a doctor. So I think that would be my main thing, is understanding what you want and understanding what you're getting yourself into if you're going to take on a trainee ACP. And for trainees, I would say just go for it. Believe in yourself. It is very daunting. You'll get there quickly. Take advantage of all of the resources that are sent your way, and don't forget to study from Auntie Lauren. Just drip feed it every day. Don't let it get on top of you. And that doesn't have to be just books and online. For myself, I love watching videos. I love listening to podcasts or listening to a video on my way home about something that I think, oh, I saw that today. I can't remember anything about that. I really need to learn that. I might not have time to sit and read it. I'll listen to it on the way home. So just something every single day, aside from your coursework, is helpful. So that's from me.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. How about you, Salma?
I always believe it's good to say, what's your motto, or what's your thing? What's your logo? And I think I've kind of adopted my parents' one, actually. So I was very blessed to have amazing parents. So my dad's philosophy was always, Salma, did you do your best? And I'd say, yeah, I did my best. And I'd say, well, then that's okay. You did your best. Well, you know, and even if I got a C or a B, he'd be, you did your best. My mum's philosophy was, did you do your best? And I'd say, yeah, I did my best. And she'd say, brilliant. Well, then next time you can do even better. So I think just knowing that actually you want to do your best, but actually, and I think Lauren's like that, she'd say, brilliant, now I've got it. And that's called repetition, and that's experience, and that's building in layers that actually you've done your best this time. Now you've steadied that platform. Now you can go one step higher. And how amazing when you can see that in each of you, you know. So did I do my best as a supervisor? Why didn't I? Could I do better? So you're questioning yourself as well as asking the supervisee if they've done best with their patients and with you and with the practice, you know, because it isn't just about you. It's all the waves and ripples that are coming from that consultation is going through everyone. So those are my philosophy, did you do your best and could you do better? Say it with a smile on your face so they're not feeling like they can never ever achieve where they want to do. Remember the 10 R's that I gave you at the beginning. Build up in layers. Don't expect them to be the finished product. And that's come from evidence with Roger Neighbor, which is sort of chunk and check and summarize and, you know, constantly doing it in small bite-sized pieces. Know each other's end goals. And I'm saying each other. You know what my end goal is, when I want to leave, what days I'm in, you know, what I'm trying to get out of this. The whole team are working with you. You work with the whole team. It's such a win-win. Be kind, you know, and sensitive to each other's needs as well. There'll be off days. There'll be days where things may not go wrong. There'll be complaints sometimes. And really bring in those compliments as well, because there'll be days where you get amazing stuff. Don't forget those. Capture it. Remember it. So those are my take-home messages. And, you know, the brain gym definitely for you as a supervisor. But I'd say those are the main things.
Brilliant. I want to say thank you very, very much. And I hope that's really useful for trainee ACPs in primary care and supervisors. And so we're really grateful of your perspective. So thank you.
So thank you so much for listening. And any questions, please find us on Twitter or head over to the website to find our contact details.